place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today's Tuesday, April 22nd, 2014, and welcome to this week's edition of American Freedom Watch Radio with Karen Schoen, John Estabrook, and Neil Rice. This is Sally Baptist speaking. Please feel free to join the discussion. It's 347-857-4364, and just make sure you press 1 if you would like to speak on the show. I'd like to speak on the air. You are more than welcome to listen, and we won't bug you. If you don't press 1, we will just let you listen. And if you want to join the discussion, make sure you press 1. And true to form, today my ranting is going to be kind of fun. I'm not going to talk about Harry Reid. We're going to ignore him, okay? But I am going to go ahead and say thank you, Cliven Bundy. Right now, you know, with everything I'm seeing out there, the emails I was getting today, it really does look like the West will rise again. It looks like the West is really taking shape, and they're going to be forcing all this federal government ownership of their land, their state sovereignty is going to be getting out of there, and those kind of things. So it's all looking good, and I think we all have a lot to truly thank Cliven Bundy, the Bundy family, the Bundy Ranch, for not caving in, not being the sheeple of the federal government out there. So it's just everything to me has been so positive. And the other piece of this, the Operation American Spring started months ago. I mean, Colonel Harry Riley, he's been out there working on this stuff since last October, I believe, maybe sooner. And we're at the point, we're down to the countdown. It's like 24 days until Operation American Spring, May 16th in Washington, D.C. And I'm telling you, if we can just get the same momentum of what is going on out there in the West right now with the Bundy Ranch ordeal, and I mean, I don't want to call this a revolution, but I think it's definitely an awakening. And, you know, this for those of you who are not familiar with Operation American Spring, this is a massive march on Washington, D.C., and I'm going to read just a very short part of what has been done already. This has been delivered to every congressional representative and our dictator in the White House, along with his friend Holder. It's called the Declaration of Administrative Revision, effective May 16th, 2014. And I'm going to read these two paragraphs, and then I'm going to hand this over to Karen so that we can get going on the rest of the show. Under the rights implicit in our people, as stipulated in the First Amendment, we hereby demand immediate restoration of our government under its intended constitutional principles, rule of law, freedom, and personal liberty, and a return to government of the people, for the people, by the people, free of despotic and tyrannical federal government control. Then it also goes on to say, this other part, this is, to begin the recovery of our rightful government, we demand immediate, lawful, and orderly replacements of the following office holders: Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Harry Reid, Mitch McConnell, John Boehner, Nancy Pelosi, and Eric Holder, according to the process allowed and stipulated in our Constitution. That is May 16th. This has already been delivered. This has already been delivered, and this is Operation American Spring, demanding these treasonous people to be removed from office, for them to resign and be replaced. And this is why it's so critical that we have millions and millions of people in Washington, D.C. on May 16th. If you have been happy, or happy probably isn't the right word, but motivated and inspired and encouraged by what we have seen happen in the Bundy camp out there, the Bundy Ranch, we have to keep this momentum going. We have to keep it going through May 16th, where Operation American Spring starts. And understand, May 16th is only the beginning of it. It's not the end of it. It's not a one-day rally. It's the beginning of a replacement of a tyrannical government that has taken over Washington, D.C., and has taken over the states. I mean, it's unbelievable. So we are on the right track, and there is definitely room to have hope and faith and be optimistic that we do have a chance to save this country. On that note, I'm going to hand this over to Karen Schoen and let her take over and see what she would like to share, what her thoughts are on what I was just saying. Hey, Karen.
Well, Sally, thank you again, and it is so wonderful for all of you to join us. We are on American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, every Tuesday from 8 to 10 Eastern Time, and on Red State Talk Radio, Wednesday at 12 noon and Sunday at 12 in the evening. Please join us. If you can't listen to the show, the whole show, it is podcast on American Statesman. Please visit our website, agenda21today.com, KarenSchoen.com, VoteKarenSchoen.com, Save America Foundation, and Panhandle Patriots. Sally, while you were talking, I was reading the Declaration of Independence, and I am asking every one of our listeners to pick that up and read it again. Take out George III, put in Barack Obama, and see if it fits. And you will find a big surprise, because guess what, folks? It fits. Every single thing that our founders were suffering are the exact same things that we are experiencing today. An overreaching, overpowering, disgraceful government that feels that they should own and control every aspect of our humanity. Every movement that we make, every breath we take. Wasn't there a song? They're watching us. I'm not getting to feel. Where did they get that phone from? Oh, my goodness. They must know something we didn't know. But that's exactly what's going on, folks. They are watching us. And they are watching us strongly. They are watching everything that we do. And all those wonderful, fuzzy, nice, warm, sweet little words are meaningless when you watch their actions. So I would suggest that each and every one of us go back and revisit the Declaration of Independence, because this is exactly what's going on. Just a couple of points here. Do you think that cutting off our trade with all other parts of the world is part of this? Hello, folks. Keystone Pipeline. What's going on with that one? Oil being shut down, no permits, the permitatorium, as John would always say, on the air. Oh, and by the way, hello, John. Hope you're having a wonderful time in Africa. let me say hi. He's not here tonight. But let's see, what else? For depriving us in many ways the benefits of trial by jury. Oh, my goodness, the confiscation of land without due process, imposing taxes on us without our consent. Does Obamacare ring a bell? Transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses. Well, they haven't done that one yet, but that doesn't mean it's not something they're working on. Protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for murderers should they commit on the inhabitants of these states. How about Benghazi? My goodness. Protection of murderers. How about those Black Panthers, Bill Ayers, running around now being a professor in colleges? These are the things that this administration is doing. Just reread, revisit, relook at the Declaration of Independence, and you will be in shock as how true the things are. I guess history never changes, which is why they don't want to teach it in school. We don't get that recording of history in school. And Sally, you're so right. The Bundy Ranch, God bless you, Clive and Bundy and the Bundy family, for finally bringing the infringement of this government to the forefront so that people have a clear understanding of what this is actually about. No, folks, it's not about tortoises, and it's not about cattle. That's what they want you to believe. They also want you to believe, I remember reading, Ivan Bundy is a dirtbag because he hasn't paid his taxes. Well, let's revisit that one for a minute, too. Clive and Bundy's grandfather or great-grandfather had a deal of land with the state of Nevada. They paid to the state of Nevada. They paid whatever was due to the state of Nevada. In addition, they used their own money, not taxpayer money, their own money, to improve the property. The cattle kept it manicured. Believe it or not, that's what cattle do. They're better than a lawnmower. They take care of the land. Why would you not want to take care of land if you're using it for your livelihood? And then all of a sudden, in marches the Bureau of Land Management with absolutely no authority, no constitutional authority under any shape or form, saying, guess what, we are your new landlord. Well, Mr. Bundy and his family said, no, you're not. I don't recognize you guys. As far as I'm concerned, you have no reason to exist. Well, how could that be possible? Well, let's take a revisit now at the Constitution. And let's revisit Article 4, Section 4. It clearly states that all Americans are guaranteed a republican form of government. That means an elected form of government. There is nowhere in our Constitution that states the federal government can own massive quantities of land. And even though the legislators at that time decided that the Bureau of Land Management should own and control all of this land, Clive and Bundy said, no, you don't. This is my family. This is my livelihood. My family paid for permits. My family paid everything necessary to the state of Nevada. The fact that you want to come in and take over doesn't mean anything to me, because I don't recognize you. That's the value and importance of America, the ability of one person to be able to say, no, not on my watch. And thank you, Clive and Bundy, for standing up and bringing to the forefront this massive land grab that is going on in this country under the guise of conservation, or a bird, or a tortoise, or a fish. These agencies have no right to destroy the livelihood of Americans, let alone destroy the livelihood of human beings, because it obviously shows they have no respect for humanity. They have no respect for humans. When anyone puts nature above humans, there is an ulterior motive. And one just has to take a very in-depth look of geography. Unfortunately, geography is no longer taught in school. Then you might have to say, why is this not taught? And the why might come out because they don't want you to know. So if you don't know something, you're not going to know what you don't have. If you don't have it, and you don't know about it, you're not going to miss it. Well, what is America? What's the makeup of America? America is one of the most richest natural resources, mineral, land in the world. If we put a fence around America and we said, we are not going to deal with anybody else, we are only going to take care of Americans. We're not going to trade. We're not going to do. We're not going to have. We're not going to buy. We're not going to get. We're only going to work with what we have on America. America would be self-sufficient. America is probably the only country in the world that would be self-sufficient. We have the land. We have fresh water. We have a favorable climate. We have mineral resources. We have energy resources. We have everything on our country, in our shores, that would keep Americans going for thousands of years without the interference of anyone. And that's the problem. The problem is that in America, when you own land, you own what's above it and you own what's below it. And the elite don't like that at all. The progressives that are part and parcel with the programs of the United Nations believe that they should be in control. And that's what this is all about. Like I said before, it's not about a turtle, and it's certainly not about cattle. Because if it was about cattle, they'd all be dead, because according to Obama now, he wants to tax the cattle out of existence for farting, because he has decided that methane gas is now a part of global, man-made global warming.
But wait a minute. But Karen, I got to ask you, I mean, God did put the cattle on this planet, right? The great creator did put the cattle on
That's
here.
That's right.
And the cattle, the gas they are releasing, isn't that totally natural? Isn't that green?
Yeah. Isn't that a surprise? Could you imagine what would happen if we lived with dinosaurs? What did they do in the time of the dinosaurs? But to show you how crazy this is, Sally, the biggest component of greenhouse gases is water. 75% of our planet is made up of water. So that's number one. Number two, 97% of greenhouse gases is made up of water vapor. 97%. So I guess the ocean won't pay taxes, and they can't get the sun to pay taxes, so they have to blame it on somebody. And what do? They pick the humans. Now, if you took a pin and you dropped it in a bathtub, that would probably be the effect of what humans would have on atmospheric conditions and greenhouse gas. 0.003% of greenhouse gas is carbon dioxide, and 0.07% is methane gas. So the combination of both of them doesn't even make up 1%, and yet that is what is being claimed as the fault of global warming.
But Karen, now, you mentioned water, and so I got to get this in there. At some point, we'll talk about the illegals don't pay any taxes either when it comes to Nevada. But when you talk about water, isn't there something going on in the District of Criminals right now trying to give the EPA control of all water on this continent or on our home?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Of course they want to control the water. Why? Because water is a component that humans need to live, and basically they have no regard for humans, so they could care less. They believe that they should control everything and tax everything that they control. And they also understand very clearly that he who controls the land and the water controls the food, and he who controls the food controls the people. So it's a nice, neat little circle made up of a lot of lies, cow manure. Maybe that's what we should send them, cow manure, because that's what this really is. Gases. Every time I think of that, I get hysterical, and then I say how sad it is that people actually believe it. That's the worst part.
Well, And you think of all the problems we have today, the things, the crisis, the different things that we need to do to save this country. This is what these people focus on. And, you know, I mean, somehow, some way, if I was independently wealthy, I would definitely have some very big billboards out there during this election season with a big old butt of a cow out there and say, this is what your government is. You know, it's time to get rid of the cow manure out of Washington, D.C. But, you know, just I'm hearing some background noise. I don't know if that's your phone. All of a sudden, okay.
No, did it stop? I'm not sure. I just dropped the phone.
Oh, that probably was it. That probably was it. And you know, all the money they spent rounding up the cattle and all the garbage that they were doing in the Bundy Ranch, they would never put that much effort in securing our border and keeping the illegals out. And then,
well,
in the meantime, China's buying up land.
That's the other side.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sally, that's the other side of the coin, because if you look at what is owned by the Bureau of Land Management, they own hundreds of thousands of acres of land right on the border. Right on the border. Imagine if they turned their guns around and actually pointed them at the people who were crossing the border. That's the part that, to me, that is the scariest, hardest part to digest, is that Americans were willing to turn their guns on other Americans over a cow and a turtle. Think about the logistics. That it absolutely makes no sense to me at all, unless there is an ulterior motive.
Called China.
Yes. And how does that play in? Well, the Chinese are buying up natural resources and minerals. They're not stupid. They know who and what is necessary to control. Why do we think the prices of our fertilizers have gone sky high? Because we are giving away, not we, you and I, our egregious, corruptocrats are busy giving away our property to China and other foreign companies. They have no right to do that. They have no right to own it. It says, we the people. We are the owners. We are the sovereign. We are the individuals who have allowed this to happen. So we allowed this government to exist. And then we gave them limited power. What does limited power mean? It meant, government, you can do these five things. That's all we want you to do. We want you to secure our borders. We want you to take care of commerce. We want you to make sure we are all safe. We want you to make sure that the laws that we need to protect us, we'll do so. We want you to take care of our roads, and we want you to create post offices. Where in there does it say own land? I think I missed that section. And I think that's what happened to other people, too. And what are they doing? They are doing a bad job at every single one of those items. I cannot name one thing that the government was charged to do that's actually working, enumerated powers.
Well, exactly. And, of course, they won't even enforce the enumerated powers. But you think military now, you know, we still have the best military in the world, but look how it's being abused and used. I mean, we have more military protecting other places than here. We don't even want to talk about what's going on in Afghanistan for the mess we've made there, but and Ukraine and stuff like that. But that's not the fault of the people in the military. It's the fault of a reckless dictator of a leader. But the point is, we spend more time trying to pretend to be protecting other places. We won't even protect our own homeland. And I tell you something, I would love the chance at some point to interview some of these BLM people, and I say, you know, you as an American, how did you feel when you were pointing that gun at another American? Well, is that really, did you feel good doing that? Do you belong at Fort Hood where they go around killing everybody and all this other stuff? Is, you know, what kind of Americans are you that you would do this? Or are you illegals? You know, the illegals seem to get away with everything. They don't seem to have to follow any rules. You know, it's totally amazing. But I tell you, I just thank God that Cliven Bundy and his family and the group out there took a stand, and then you think of all the other people who have come forward, and they're still protecting that place because they know the BLM is waiting for people to stand back and, you know, walk away for a minute, and then they're going to go in and take over. It's just, so I do truly pray to God these people are safe and that they're able to stay there until they take back that land the way it's supposed to be, kind of thing. So it's just really something. We do have your guest anytime you are ready to bring her on.
Well, today we're going to have a lesson in something that I don't really have very much knowledge about. And I'm very happy to have with us Lynn Wilder. Lynn is an author and also a professor. And her specialty was in Mormonism, which I have very little knowledge of, and Christianity, of course, which I do have knowledge of. But Lynn, welcome. Join us this evening. You're talking to Karen Schoen and Sally Baptist.
Hello. How are you, Karen?
I am wonderful, and thank you so much for joining us this evening. Lynn, before we go any further, please tell everyone where they can reach you, what your websites are.
My website is unveilingmormonism.com. Or the book is unveilinggracethebook.com. So I have recently written a book within the last few months, came out last August, called Unveiling Grace, the story of how we found our way out of the Mormon Church. And it's been selling really, really well. I've been on the road most of the last 6 months.
Well, we have had so many gray areas surrounding Mormonism, and it's really important. Yes, we are multicultural. We are multi-religious. We should not be multicultural. Multi-religious is different. We should all be practicing the same culture based on the American philosophy, which part of that says you are free to practice any religion that you choose. The goal of our founders was not to limit religion. It was to enhance morality. And they did not care how you received or how you understood or how you are participated in morality. They just wanted to make sure that there was morality. So can you give us a history and please explain the differences in the Mormon religion and what it is that sets it apart and brings it together.
Sure. The Mormon religion was one of those uniquely American religions that rose up in the early 1800s, particularly this one came about through a man by the name of Joseph Smith in 1830. He supposedly went out in a grove to pray which church he was supposed to join, and a deity appeared to him and told him to join none of them, and then he eventually started the Mormon Church. He was a polygamist in the beginning, and when Abraham Lincoln came to power, he very much disliked the polygamy of the Mormon people. They were living in the Utah Territory at the time. A little bit of interesting history. Lincoln passed the anti-bigamy, I think it's moral anti-bigamy law in 1862, and intended to come after the Mormons and ask them to stop practicing it. But, of course, he got tied up in the Civil War, then was killed about 65. And so it was Ulysses S. Grant who actually marched an army out to Utah and told them they would not be a state until they stopped practicing polygamy or the federal government would take their temple away and their assets away. So at the time, Mitt Romney's father was a grandfather, might have been a great-grandfather, was a polygamist, and he left in the 1880s and went to Mexico. A lot of the other polygamists left and went to Canada. So that's kind of the history of the Mormon Church. Also, there is some racism in that church. There are still racist scriptures in that church, and that was another thing that Lincoln had a hard time with the Mormon Church over. In fact, the Republican Party was originally formed because of those two evils, polygamy and racism.
Oh, I knew that racism had a large portion of the original Republican platform. I never realized that polygamy was one of the issues as well. That's very interesting. How do the Mormons view Jesus Christ? What is their take on Jesus Christ?
They do teach Jesus Christ, and they do say he was the savior of the world, but Mormons have 3 additional books of scripture besides the Bible, and they teach that the Bible is sometimes not true, sometimes translated incorrectly, but their 3 Mormon scriptures are perfect. And those are 3 scriptures that came either to Joseph Smith, who was the first prophet of the Mormon Church, or some subsequent prophets to the Mormon Church. So the Jesus Christ that they have teaches a different way to salvation. So, you have to kind of make your own determination as to whether that would be the same Jesus Christ that's in the Bible.
Well, that's very interesting, because I know being Jewish that we view Jesus as a prophet and put him in the same category, if we will, as Moses and other administrators of God's word, but we do not look at him as the Son of God. He's still
right. The
most important figure. We still believe that, yes, he did help tremendously, and, the religious attributes that he created were incredible and remarkable, but when it comes to him being the Son of God, that the line is drawn, and to us he is just a prophet like the other prophets. So it's quite interesting. Now, the polygamy issue, today, no polygamy.
Actually, Ulysses S. Grant told the Mormons that Utah would never be a state as long as they practiced polygamy. So in 1890, soon after all of this came to a head, the Mormon prophet had a revelation from God that they were no longer to practice polygamy. However, the reality is there were Mormon prophets that were polygamous up until 1945, although that revelation came in 1890. And, of course, the estimates today are that there are probably between 30,000 and 100,000 currently practicing polygamy in the United States. Almost all of that polygamy stems from Joseph Smith and Mormonism. So I'm sure you're aware of My 5 Wives, some of those polygamy reality shows on television.
Right.
That's connected to original Mormonism. And, of course, no good practicing Mormons today would not be polygamous. Polygamous are an offshoot. However, in their scriptures, Doctrine and Covenants 132, it says that polygamy is an eternal principle, so they expect to practice it in the next life.
Oh. That's quite interesting. I had not realized that. So they believe in the afterlife.
They do believe in the afterlife. In fact, they believe that you can be saved to Mormonism in the afterlife. The temples that they build, they do something called redeeming the dead in those temples. They'll take the name of a dead ancestor into the temple and go through about 3 hours of ordinances and covenants in that person's name, and then they have the ability, they believe, to accept or reject Mormonism in the next life.
Wow. That was the one I always had a tough time grasping, the afterlife.
Yeah. So Mormons are great genealogists. The ancestry.com I noticed recently, if you're Mormon, you get it free. But if you're not Mormon, you're paying for the service. So I suspect it's either a member of the Mormon Church that owns it, or, you know, someone that has good feelings toward Mormons. But partly what all of those records are for is so that they can find names of the dead to take to the temple. And you may be aware that the Mormons several years back took all of the Holocaust victims' names to the temple and baptized them into Mormonism. And the Jews actually filed a lawsuit against the Mormon Church and asked them to stop doing that.
Yeah, I would imagine. I would imagine that wouldn't fit very well. However, so what are some of the historical things that the Mormons have contributed to America?
That is a good question. Television. The man who invented television was a Mormon. Boy, that's an interesting question.
Well, what's happening in our education right now is that Judaism, Christianity, and all of the religions that teach Ten Commandments, Christ's law, common law, natural law, they're all being diminished. And with that goes a large portion of history, because we no longer know or understand where these things came from, who created them, who did them, why they did them. And I find that fascinating. Even in black history, there's so much of black history that has been eliminated that it's very sad to go back in history and realize, oh, my God, this was created because of everything happened because of something else. Nothing happened out of thin air. And when you make those connections, then you can put people together and recognize that we're really one. We really have the same beliefs. We really have the same ideology. And that's what makes America great. So a lot of the historical things that are missing are things that we like to bring back and, recreate, show. I know Utah was a huge advantage to the Mormon religion. It wouldn't be what it is today without the Mormons. And some of the things are great, some of the things are not great. We're all religions, all groups of people have good things and then they have bad things. So by understanding what happened in the past, it makes it easier to move forward and be able to understand what we could be facing.
Yes. Well, Mike and I lived in Utah for about 8 years, from 99 to 07, because I was a tenured professor at Brigham Young University, which is the Mormon Church-owned university. There's a BYU with 34,000 students in Provo, Utah. Then there's also a BYU in Idaho, and there's a BYU in Hawaii. One of the interesting things that you were talking about a little while ago that happened right before we got to Utah was that Bill Clinton, at the end of his term, walked into Utah and took 1.7 million acres and made it a national monument just with kind of a stroke of the pen, which was a shock to all of us Utahns. You may know that between 60 and 65% of the land in Utah has been taken by the federal government and is either a national monument or a national forest. So it really reduces the amount of taxes that Utah can bring in from businesses. So we have the Clive and Bundy situation. A similar thing happened when Clinton took the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. There were ranchers whose families, mostly Mormon families, had been there for generations, and they were working the land, and then the land was taken away from them, and then they either had to pay the federal government or the federal government didn't allow their cattle to be on the land, which had been theirs for generations.
That sounds very familiar. Seems as though we're going through that one right now.
Yeah, and of course there are all those water rights issues out west.
Well, that's true. And you know what I find is really the saddest thing? We are, this planet is 75% water. With all of the billions and trillions of dollars that have been spent on the lies and the hoaxes, all surrounding man-made global warming, everybody's screaming we have a water shortage. Wouldn't you think some of the money would have gone into desalinization plants?
Yeah, interesting, isn't it?
It's just, well, like somebody said to me, Karen, that's too logical, therefore the government will never do it. So they would rather go running around screaming, we're going to have a water shortage, we're going to have a water shortage, instead of actually doing something about a water shortage.
And the oil issue.
And the water that we have.
Yes.
Utah is a landlocked state, meaning they do not border an ocean. Unfortunately, many of our people do not know geography. But the makeup of Utah, you said that 75% of it is owned by the federal government. So they are in a very similar position as Nevada.
Now, I'm not familiar with Nevada's situation, except that I don't know how much of the land is owned by the federal government, but they apparently did take Clive and Bundy's land at one point, and I'm sure other ranchers in that area. That's high kind of plateau area. I was just up there last fall. Interesting history up that way. Something called the Mountain Meadows Massacre happened up not too far from the Utah-Nevada border. Probably in the 1850s, a wagon train was coming from Arkansas and Missouri through there, and the Indians and the Mormon pioneers actually slaughtered folks in the wagon and train. It's an interesting story called Mountain Meadows Massacre.
What was that about?
Well, it had to do with the fact that Mormons believed that some of those people were involved in killing their original prophet, Joseph Smith. And so when that wagon train came through Utah, tensions just got hot, and the Mormons killed Christians that they perceived to be their enemy because they thought that they had been involved or their relatives had been involved in killing Joseph Smith.
Mm. Where did Brigham Young fit in all of this? It's at Brigham Young University.
Well, Joseph Smith started the church. He was born in Vermont. He started the church in New York, I think, moved to Kirtland, Ohio for a time. Then the church moved to Nauvoo, Illinois, which is right on the Mississippi River. Then they went to Missouri for a time. They were driven out of Missouri, and the Missourians actually killed a few Mormons, probably 20 or less, maybe 15. And then the Mormons went back, settled in Nauvoo on the river. And Joseph was practicing polygamy at the time, and it was causing a lot of trouble for his neighbors there. Joseph was eventually killed, taken to jail for destroying a printing press, and then he was killed there. And when he was killed, he was the first prophet, and then he had called 12 apostles, like Christ's original church. And so those 12 apostles then took over running the Mormon church. This would have been early 1840s, I think 1844, I believe he was martyred. And Brigham Young kind of rose up as the leader of those 12 apostles and then eventually took over the church leadership and became the next prophet. And what he did was decide the saints just needed to leave Nauvoo, Illinois, where they weren't too loved, and go west. And they literally left in the middle of the winter, went across the Mississippi and camped over there until winter was over, and then they began building wagons and going west. And so they traveled west, and when they got to the Salt Lake Valley, they decided to stay. And then the Mormons kind of began to own that territory, kind of befriended the Indians, and they kind of grew in isolation there, I'd say, for 100 and 150 years. It's just been the last maybe 50 years, you know, that other folks besides Mormons have been moving into the Utah area. But Mormons also, like Brigham Young, sent people out to settle different areas. So he sent people to California. So Southern California has a lot of Mormons. He sent people out into Nevada to settle and into Idaho, Eastern Washington, Arizona, and so all over the West, kind of there are pockets of Mormonism.
I didn't realize that. You know, when you think of Mormonism, you think of Utah.
There are more Mormons in California than in
never
Utah.
Never realized that. Wow.
And a huge population in Arizona, like the Mesa, Arizona areas. Phoenix is largely Mormon.
This is really very, very interesting. So right now in the state of Florida,
yes,
the Mormons just purchased a huge tract of land owned by St. Joe Corporation.
I think they now own 600,000 acres, did I see, in the state of Florida.
Yes.
So the largest private, well, I don't know if it's a private entity, landowner in Florida, yes. They've bought up a lot of land around Disney. And I was at in Orlando at CREW recently. CREW used to be Campus Crusade for Christ. So I was on their headquarters. They probably have 800 employees there. And they told me the Mormon Church had just bought up all the territory around their headquarters there in the Orlando area. Cattle ranches, and they have citrus. And the Mormon Church is an interesting business entity. They have mixed both nonprofit and for-profit businesses.
Ooh.
And that money all comes into the Mormon Church. The estimates, let me see if I can see. I think the estimates are something like they bring in $6 or $8 billion a year, and that they own, they're valued, let's see, the church's total value is probably about $30 billion, and that was in the 1990s. Time magazine did this article. So they're very, very, very wealthy. And I was always a little confused about why the Mormon Church has not reported to the federal government since the 1960s what money they take in. And yet, you know, I had grown up in a Protestant faith where I knew that every penny that came in was reported on a weekly bulletin, and then where it went out was always reported. The Mormon Church appears to be a very, they own Deseret Management Corporation, Ensign Peak Advisors, Agricultures, Ag Reserves, Real Estate, Polynesian Cultural Center in Hawaii, of course, BYU, Temple Square Hospitality, Beneficial Financial Group. They have Bonneville International Corporation.
Wow.
So they own like a TV station and radio stations and that kind of stuff as well. So, they're a force to be reckoned with.
They certainly are. I didn't realize that. I'm now wondering if this 600,000 acres in Florida is going to be taxable or not taxable.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be wonderful for someone to find out?
I'm going to check on that because I was under the impression when I first read the articles on it, it said that it was purchased, you know, in conjunction with the Mormon Church, but that they would continue doing the agriculture because that was why they had purchased it. They would continue to provide jobs and pay taxes. But from what you're saying now, that might have been, as we say, a crock of crap, because I have no idea.
Yes, I can't speak intelligently to that. I don't know that anyone can. I mean, I don't know that anyone knows exactly how much money they take in and where it goes. I do this same. This article was from Business Week just a couple of years ago, and it said that the Mormon Church gave $1.3 billion in humanitarian aid in more than 178 countries and territories during the 25 years between 1985 and 2010, but then they compared that to the Methodist Church, which had given $52 billion, let's see, I'm not sure how much, but the Methodist Church ended up being 29% of what they brought in. But for the Mormon Church, the donations were 0.7%, not even 1% of its annual income that went out to the poor in humanitarian aid.
Okay, so from what I'm seeing what I'm hearing is they do give back to the community. They are very big on that.
Yeah, well, when there's a disaster, certainly the Mormon Church shows up. But when I was a member, I would say that typically they take care of their own. If there are welfare needs, they would take care of their own people who are active and go to church every week. The Mormon Church has food storage. They have all these wonderful grain silos. In Salt Lake, they do a very good job of growing food and then having food available for their members when they are in need.
So, well, then that's quite good. Are they politically leaning one way or the other, or do they not get involved? I mean, we all know Mitt Romney was a Mormon. So
well, Harry Reid is a Mormon, too.
Right. Yeah.
So we've got a Democrat and a Republican. I would say most Mormons would be right-leaning, and they would vote Republican. Utah is largely a Republican state. The Republican Party pretty much runs the state between the church and the Republican Party. Very right-leaning. You probably know during Proposition 8 in California that the Mormon Church got very involved, although the church itself didn't give a lot of money. They had large donations from their members, and then the members gave a lot of time an effort which helped pass Prop 8, which of course was reversed by the courts last summer, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was last summer.
Yeah, so certainly conservative leanings, I would say, typically, although Harry Reid's kind of an anomaly.
Well,
but John Huntsman.
He's an anomaly of the human being.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's so many things you can say when you're talking Harry Reid.
He's an anomaly of the human.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch Mike Lee. I think he's the next one, I think, maybe, seems to be floating around that would be a Mormon. You know, the Mormon prophet had prophesied, Joseph Smith had prophesied, that the U.S. Constitution would hang by a thread someday, and a Mormon elder would ride in as on a white horse and save the Constitution. So when I was Mormon, I certainly would have been thrilled for Mitt Romney to be elected, thinking that he would fulfill that prophecy. It'll be interesting to see if Mormons continue to be very involved in politics. They certainly are involved in the CIA and the military and the FBI and the IRS. In fact, you probably know the new NSA Center, National Security, what is it? NSA Center,
yes.
Where they collect all the data from phone calls and emails and whatever, that all of that is right there south of Salt Lake now. Kind of goes through Utah territory, the main kind of information gathering place for national security here.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. It was in Utah, yes. Wow.
Yeah.
Got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, got a question for you. I remember hearing this when Romney was running, as well as other times and other things, the comparison of the Mormon faith and Islam, whether the Mormon faith is somehow a spinoff of Islam or something. What is, I've heard that several times about the two. Do you know is there any truth to any of that, or what is that about?
Wow, that's an interesting question. There are some similarities if you're just looking at how the faiths came to be. In Islam, you have the prophet Muhammad. In Mormonism, you had the prophet Joseph Smith. The Mormons actually have a hymn where they sing praise to the man who communed with Jehovah. So they sing praises to Joseph Smith. Certainly Islam praises Muhammad. Muhammad brought forth what Christians consider extra-biblical scripture, you know, scripture that didn't come necessarily from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but came from the prophet Muhammad. And the same thing with Joseph Smith. I told you there were three books of scripture. One's called The Doctrine and Covenants, The Pearl of Great Price, and The Book of Mormon. Those are all uniquely Mormon scriptures. Let's see. Well, of course, the polygamy in heaven is a similarity.
I
mean, I was trying to think of how those two faiths see Jesus. Islam certainly believes that Jesus was a prophet and that he will return with the 12th Imam. And Joseph Smith believes that he is the Son of God and a Savior, although the Godhead, Mormonism does not believe in just one God. Their Father, Son, and Holy Ghost are three separate gods. So it's actually polytheism, which is why a lot of Christian faiths see Mormonism as outside of Christianity, but other, you know, Christian faiths would put them inside of Christianity. But that is one major difference.
Yeah, and that was kind of the confusion. It's like, well, wait a minute. If it's a form of Christianity, and how can it be a form of Islam at the same time? But in some weird way, it's some weird combination, I guess. I don't know.
Ladies, 1 minute, please. You are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman, on Tuesday from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., and on Red State Talk Radio on Wednesday at 12 p.m. afternoon, and on Sunday, 12 a.m. in the morning. Please visit our websites, agenda21today.com, karenshone.com, votekarenshone.com, and panhandlepatriots.com, and saveamericafoundation.com. You're listening to Karen Schoen, Sally Baptist, and our guest, Lynn Wilder. We're having a very interesting discussion on Mormonism and its role in America. Thank you for listening. Okay. We're back. I didn't mean to interrupt Lynn, but we have to have a station day on occasion so everyone knows what we're doing and knows what we're talking about.
Yes, thank you. I'm sure if you tuned in some of those conversations, it would have sounded quite strange.
Well, it's very fascinating to me, having studied history, how all of these groups interact and fit together. And I guess Mormonism is the newest of the religions.
Came to be about the same time, I think, as Jehovah Witnesses and maybe Christian Science in the United States, all of those kind of traditionally American religions grew up about the same time from some kind of great awakening in the United States, as far as I know. You reminded me of something else when you were talking just a minute ago. When I was a professor at Brigham Young, an Ottoman exhibit, you know, the Turks, the Ottomans that were they ruled a lot of the Middle East for several hundred years until like 1922, I believe. Well, an Ottoman exhibit came through BYU, and in this exhibit was a garment that the soldiers would wear underneath their armor, Turkish soldiers, maybe 500 years ago. So here's displayed this garment that the Turks are wearing, and it has markings on it. And the markings that are on this Ottoman garment from the Ottoman soldiers were the exact same markings that I had on my Mormon temple garments. Worthy Mormons who go to the temple then have special underwear that they wear, and the underwear has these markings on it. And I was so surprised to find those markings on an Ottoman garment.
That is weird.
So I was in the Middle East last May and talked to an archaeologist, and I told him this story. I said, what in the world? Why in the world would Ottoman garments and Mormon temple garments have the same markings on them? And he said, oh, I can explain that. He said, masonry runs through some areas of Islam. And, of course, Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism, was a Mason, and he basically took the masonry ceremony and put it in the Mormon temple. So I thought that was such an interesting connection. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I did know that on one of the archaeological digs in Ohio, when they went into one of the Indian reservations, they began to uncover some of the artifacts and they were of Hebrew origin.
So yeah, the mound builders, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And
well,
I imagine crossing back and forth was similar.
Well, this is that I've heard Glenn Beck talk about that. You probably know that Glenn Beck is a strong temple-going Mormon. Tell you this, the Book of Mormon tells the story that before the Assyrians conquered Jerusalem in 586 BC, that God spoke to a man by the name of Lehi, told him that Jerusalem was going to be destroyed, and told him that he should take his family and leave Jerusalem, which supposedly he did. And then he and his family built boats and came all the way across the waters and settled in Central America, landed in Central America. So this is 586 BC, 587 BC. That's the story of the Book of Mormon, that there were Jews from Israel that came and settled in this new land in Central America and then built two great civilizations. The Book of Mormon talks about Nephites being righteous, and they were white-skinned. And then because the Lamanites chose to be unrighteous, God turned their skin black. This is still in the Book of Mormon. And so they believe that the dark-skinned people, the dark-skinned Israelites then, became the forerunners of Native Americans in the United States. So it makes sense to them that if you go into mound building or Native American, old places, that you would find artifacts that were Hebrew or Jewish. They actually said they spoke a Reformed Egyptian, is what the Book of Mormon says. But the problem is some people have checked the DNA of Native Americans, and their DNA goes back to Asia. It doesn't go back to the Middle East. So that's kind of a problem for people who are trying to prove Mormonism through facts and evidence, because there certainly is not DNA evidence that Israelites came to Central America and are the forerunners of the American Indians. But yeah, that is interesting. I don't know whether it's true. If it is true, it's interesting for sure. I know the Mormons for a long time tried to say that those Incan kind of pyramids that were found in Central America were probably from Book of Mormon peoples, but they've now been dated to, I believe, 900, and the Book of Mormon stopped at 400 AD. So it's not a match in time. So people are still trying to figure out if Jews really did come to the United States, or they came to America, and all of those Book of Mormon stories are true. Well, where are those cities, and where are the spears from the great battle? The great last battle in the Book of Mormon had 230,000 people who died in it. Certainly we should be able to find a bone, a few bones, if that's true, and spears and armor and leather and whatever else we need. But the problem with the Book of Mormon is there's no physical evidence for it. And yet, as far as the Bible goes and the Old Testament goes, you can go to Israel, and so many of those cities are still there. They're still called the same thing. You have pottery, you have places and people and just evidence all over the place.
And it's so sad that we can't all get along. I'm sure if we traced everything back, Mrs. Stone said that if we traced our new civilization back, there's 5,000 people and we are all descendants of the same 5,000 people.
Mm.
So here we have how many billions, and we all came out of the same 5,000. Isn't that interesting?
Well, I know for Middle East peoples, tracing genealogy is a pretty important thing, huh? Yes. Mormons do the same thing, yeah.
It's really fascinating. It's quite a story. Quite a story. What prompted you from leaving Mormonism to becoming, well, what prompted you to leave Mormonism? Why did you leave the church?
When I was at BYU, I was assigned to teach diversity, among other things, and I was bumping up against some racism in my Mormon students who were trying to tell me that black was not equal to white, and they mentioned something called the Curse of Cain, which, believe it or not, I'd never even heard of the Curse of Cain. And so I began to research why my students had this racism and why they were telling me that black wasn't equal to white. And I began to investigate my own Mormon scriptures. I was Mormon at the time, and I bumped up against scriptures like, let's see, this is from the Book of Mormon. A sore cursing, as they were white and exceedingly fair and delightsome, that they might not be enticing unto my people, the Lord God did cause a skin of blackness to come upon them. So there are 26 of these kind of scriptures, mostly in the Book of Mormon and also in the Pearl of Great Price. So what I began to realize was I was going to have a hard time teaching my students that all skin colors were equal if they had these scriptures that taught them that black was a curse. And so that just became a huge, huge problem for me. And one of my sons then chose to leave the faith, and my husband and I actually started to read the Bible. Now, as a Mormon, I didn't really trust the Bible. I trusted the Mormon scriptures above the Bible. But when I started to read the Bible, I realized it was a very different golden Mormonism, and I really had to make a choice. Did I want the Jesus of the Bible? And I am a Christian, and I do believe in Christ. So, or do I want the Christ of Mormonism, which teaches things like polygamy and racism? And my family eventually all left. There is an honor code, though, at Brigham Young University, and if you're a student and you leave the Mormon church, then you're not allowed to enroll in classes and you're not allowed to graduate from the university. One of my sons was a piano performance major, got to his senior year and chose to leave the Mormon church and could not finish his degree. And, of course, although I was tenured, once I gave up faith in Mormonism, then I, too, had to leave the university. So that's kind of our family story, and people are interested in that story. It's in the book called Unveiling Grace, the story of how we found our way out of the Mormon church. It's kind of an interesting story.
Well, you can share. We share.
Yeah.
So you did have a difficult time leaving the Mormon church, or that was just a family thing?
Well, I understand.
You couldn't participate in what the normal Mormon functions would be.
Right. Once I leave, I lose my temple recommend, which I had earned and I held for 30 years because I had to live a health code. I had to attend my Mormon meetings. I would have had to hold a calling in the church. I had to profess Joseph Smith as a prophet. I had to profess that the Book of Mormon was true. And once I didn't believe any of those things, then I couldn't hold a temple recommend. So, no, I couldn't participate anymore in the religious rituals of Mormonism. Plus, there's a real kind of not with everyone, but there certainly is a kind of shunning that goes on when you leave the faith. It's a very close-knit culture. People are in the Mormon Church are together a lot. They know each other really well. They have strong belief in their faith. And, you know, once I left, then they don't want me to influence other people to leave. So literally my next-door neighbor in Utah told me that her children couldn't speak to my kids anymore once we left the church.
Wow, that's drastic. That's really drastic.
Yeah. Well, one of the temple recommend questions, in order to be worthy to go to the temple, one of the temple recommend questions asks you if you affiliate with anyone that has beliefs that are contrary to the Mormon Church. So if you do affiliate with someone whose beliefs are contrary to the Mormon Church, it can be putting your standing in the church in jeopardy. So that kind of shuts down all those relationships. And I lost 30 years of friends. My husband and I had quite a network in the church. You know, pretty much everybody we knew were in the Mormon church, and same with our kids. So we left Utah and moved to Florida and just started all over again. It took me a little while to get used to the culture of the outside world. I'd been in the Mormon bubble so long, I didn't know how to dress and how to act. The year, let's see, we came here in 07. In January of 08, remember the feds went into Texas and they took 400 children out of that polygamy compound where Warren Jeffs was. Yep. Well, Warren Jeffs is an offshoot of Mormonism. He lives the original Mormonism. Of course, Mormons today don't claim polygamy, so they separate themselves from those folks. But he is living original Mormonism. So I'm watching him on television right after I left the Mormon church thinking, wow, you know, I'm feeling good that I've left that kind of those beliefs behind. Yeah.
Was it difficult for your children? I imagine being sheltered in a Mormon church for so long and then all of a sudden going into a mainstream, you know, a mainstream, were they of school age, I guess is really the question. How did they interact in school? Because in Utah, where you were living, they would have gone to church-run schools?
No, there are no things except at the college level. You know, Mormonism doesn't have like charter schools or private schools. But in Utah, they, you know, the public schools are very Mormon. Most of the folks there are Mormon. My youngest was a senior in high school while all this happened, and my oldest must have been about 27. So they were adults, and all four of them married into the Mormon church, and then their spouses left with them. So I have four in-law families that are not so happy with our families because we've left their culture and their beliefs. Yeah, but, you know, they're adults, and they have strong marriages, and they have children, so they're doing well. Three of my kids are in Florida now, and one's back
in the Catholic religion, if you left the Catholic religion a while ago, you were basically kicked out of the Catholic Church. And the same thing with the Jewish religion. When I was growing up, if you married someone that was outside the Jewish religion, I remember my uncle going, not, first of all, he wouldn't go to my cousin's wedding, and after that he wore a black armband because she was dead to him.
Wow. And so he never talked to her again?
Well, eventually they spoke, which was always good because the grandchild made the difference. But he was totally opposed. He almost refused to go to the wedding, but he did go. But after that, he had no use for her. He used to well, talked down because she did not marry someone who was Jewish. Now, my first husband was not Jewish, but it was later on. She was 10 years older than me. I was younger, and it was more acceptable at that time. But my friends who were Orthodox Jews, they would have never thought to marry somebody that was not Jewish. My family was more of the Reformed, the Americanized Jews. So it was not unheard of. It was not that uncommon when I was when I was of the age, in my 20s, to be married. It wasn't an atrocity. It wasn't a disgrace to the family like it was when my cousin got married. That was a total family disgrace.
I understand that. I think things are probably very similar, although, of course, each Mormon family can make their own choice about that. But my third son, all of my sons served Mormon missions with the bicycles and the name tags and the suits, you know. My oldest served in Russia for 2 years, and the next one in Denmark for 2 years, trying to proselytize people into Mormonism. And then the third son ended up in Orlando, Florida. While he was in Orlando, he decided that Mormonism was not true. And he spoke that out loud, and he was told he had the spirit of the devil in him, that he was an antichrist, and so they sent him home in disgrace. So that was in 2006, so not so long ago.
Right.
But certainly that same idea of, if you're professing anything contrary, then certainly you're not in a good place.
Got a question for you. This is actually for both of you, but I know Karen and I have talked a little bit on some other shows about it. But when you think about the Mormon faith in general, and we see this, whatever you want to call this change, this cultural lack of faith change, whatever it is in this country today,
mm-hmm.
I mean, how much does it seem, I mean, were we better to have more Mormons than all these who don't seem to be attached to anything? And then we have what I would say somewhat of a takeover of the Muslim Islamist faith coming in. Apparently Islam has taken over Michigan from what I'm hearing. And, I mean, what is the Mormon faith in reference in Christianity? Myself, I openly admit I don't go to any regular church. I do believe I am a person of faith, and I kind of backed away from the church for a few reasons over the years, but I guess when I ran for Orange County Mayor a few years ago, that was when I was probably more so than ever decided I wasn't going to go to an organized religion, and some people say I'm not right, because the fact that I would go there and I would see some crazy, ridiculous politician posing, take for photo ops in front of a church to be pretending to be holy, when I think they're some of the most unholy and evil. And I'm just, what is the religion in our culture? What is happening to it? How it's aided the demise of our country? And you understand where I'm kind of going here? I'm trying to appreciate it. But,
absolutely.
I mean, I just don't know, here in Orlando, if I was going to a church and see either Orange County Mayor Teresa Jacobs or Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer, I would probably have to puke on them or something. I don't know, but I couldn't stand to be anywhere near them. I'd feel slimy and evil by even being near them.
Well, I think there's a difference between faith and religion. And certainly religion is puffed up and pompous and thinks it's right and is prideful and all of that. But certainly there's a simple faith that people need to have in values that are moral, et cetera. I can tell you a little bit about what's happening in the Mormon Church right now. They were the fastest growing religion in the United States, with Islam, by the way, right behind them, for a long time, but just recently they are losing people in droves, And the majority of those people, we believe, are going to atheism. They feel like they've been burned by religion. They're angry and they're done. Very much concerns me. But also I'm a professor in a secular university, so I see a younger generation not only throwing God out of their lives, but being hostile, you know. So I think it is a concern, and I think it is accelerating quite a bit in our country. What that will do to the morals, I don't know.
I think that's the problem, because I also, I'm like I appreciate Sally, and I am very similar to Sally. After going to temple and seeing many of the people there, knowing how they lie and cheat and steal, and then would go to temple on Friday and Saturday and do all of these rituals and then turn around on Sunday and start the same lying and cheating and stealing again. I did the same thing. I said, I can't go to temple and sit next to these people, knowing what they do, knowing who they are. I mean, nobody is perfect. We all have gone through our times and we all have done whatever it is. But doing this and then going to temple and then feeling, because I went to temple for a day, that all of a sudden my sins are, you know, it's giving me free license to then turn around and do the same thing again, because I'll go to temple and ask for forgiveness again. Mm. So I threw up my hands and I said, I'm not going to temple. I'm not giving myself to an individual to interpret my words to talk to God. If I want to talk to God, I'll talk to God myself. I don't need somebody else. But that didn't change the fact that I believed in good and bad and right and wrong. And that's the problem that I see today happening with our young people. And I think a lot of that is coming from school, because in school they are learning that there is no factual information. Everything can be made up on the come, so to speak, because it feels good and you can do it for the moment because it feels good, and because it feels good, it's got to be okay. And I think that's what they're believing now.
Well, and also that there is no absolute truth, or there aren't absolute morals, the idea that everyone kind of creates their own based on their culture. So
what kind of a culture is this when our culture is breeding liars? I asked a parent a couple of weeks ago. We were having a conversation, and she was telling me how wonderful Obama was. So I asked her if she had children. She said yes. And I said, do you allow your children to lie to you? Is it acceptable in your house? And she said, I would kill him if he lied. He'd be in his room forever. He'd never come out. How dare he even think that he could lie to me? And I said, well, then why do you accept the lies from the extreme role model, our president? Why is it acceptable because he's the president, and it's not acceptable because he's your child? Where do you draw the line? What's the difference?
And she We've said, certainly gotten used
I
to
I never
it.
Thought of that.
Oh, my. Isn't that sad to say that I never thought of that? How sad is it that you could say the president, the leader of the world, free world routine, and this major role in society, it's okay for them to lie to us, the peasants. We're just the peasants, that's all. So it doesn't matter, don't you know. And, of course, he claims to be a Christian as well. That's another story if we want to get into that.
Well, I think you make a really good point about the idea that religion gets in the way, I think, often of a personal relationship between someone and God. Other humans telling us this or that and setting rules and there being hypocrisy and sometimes a lot of legalism or ritualism that really doesn't need to be there between ourselves and God.
What do we do to bring back morality to our kids, to our country? Because right now, personally, I feel that we are entering into reliving the Roman Empire.
Mm.
And the Colosseum has become Hollywood and the sports arena. Nothing is important. I like to go on, when I open up my web browser, I like to look at Yahoo and those websites because I like to see what the people are thinking. And you
mm-hmm.
have to get down almost to the bottom of the page before you see something that's newsworthy. The majority of it is what this one is wearing, what that one did,
mm-hmm.
what this
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
It has no meaning in life.
Mm. Well, I can tell you what I've learned to do in my own professional career since I've kind of gotten slotted into multiculturalism or diversity. I have more than 50 publications, and I'm writing lately about a moral multiculturalism. And, you know, everybody's saying, well, this point of view can be true, and this can be true, and this person can believe that, and we can all get along. Well, is it really true that Hitler's point of view is equal to the Jewish point of view? Is it really, you know, are you saying that the slave's point of view in the United States in the 1850s was equal to their owner's point of view? Is there not some moral sense still left in us that we can ask these questions and make these hard decisions? Is it really so hard to decide which of that is moral?
I don't know. That's a really good question.
Well, what do you
because
think when they? I was just going to say, what do you think when they totally removed out of the public schools, and now obviously not the private church schools, but out of the public schools, they wouldn't even take a moment of silence. That was too much religion.
Yeah, there seems to be a really hostile anti-God movement in the United States, and it's really accelerated, I would say, just quickly in the last few years.
Well, that has
glad
to do,
I'm not
unfortunately, with our leadership and the demonization of the American culture by the professing of continually categorizing people and bringing everything back to, you know, right and wrong and God. And when you have a media that refuses to call a lie,
mm-hmm.
and you have people that are so, quote, politically correct that they can't even say the word lie, it makes it difficult for people to understand what is a lie and what is the truth. Nothing was more disturbing to me than reading in the paper that Tampa is the number two city for human trafficking. Human trafficking, that's slavery, right in front of our noses, and nobody is calling anyone out on human trafficking.
Yeah.
Nobody is bringing these immoral acts to the forefront. It's not political correctness. That's just total corruption. And that, to me, becomes perversion, which then becomes acceptable. I mean, I can accept homosexuality if that's what you want to do. I don't care what you do when you close your door. I don't care what church you go to. It's not of interest to me. What is of interest to me is that when we interact about the truth, whatever it happens to be. And that creates the honesty, that creates the trust, that creates the ability to know that, oh, I could count on Sally because I know from our interactions, whatever it is, Sally's going to tell me the truth. Mm-hmm. And that gives me a different light of looking at Sally. When you listen to people like Harry Reid, for example, and you listen to or our girlfriend, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, it turns my stomach because everything that they're saying is a lie. And where do you go from there if that's all the kids are learning? And that's all. They have no idea what true is. They have no idea what true values are. And they have no idea what morality is. So everything is acceptable. So, gee, it's okay if some 60-year-old man has sex with a 12-year-old girl. That's acceptable. Give me a break. In what society and culture is that acceptable, except a society and culture based on evil? So I have to go back to this society and culture of non-morality has to be evil. We need to call it what it is, and it's evil. And it is, to me, it is the basis of what's happening now. These people are totally evil. If you can lie to someone's face, knowing the truth,
excuse me, I was just going to say, and just think about our founders, George Washington and John Adams specifically, how much they talked about the role of religion and faith in a moral society in order to be a free society. I find it so interesting and amazing because I remember when I was in school, they tried to say that George Washington was an atheist or whatever else. I mean, some of the crazy things they said there, but when you go back and you really learn about who these people were, and when you read, you know, George Washington's farewell address, President George Washington, his farewell address is just so amazing. I read it all the time, and it's so true to what has happened today. And it talks about the role of faith. And I think it was John Adams, who said, a free society will not survive without a moral society, a moral faith-based, and those types of things. And now today it just seems like we are losing all of that out of political correctness, out of pure evilness. I mean, I have to tell you, and this, I'm not trying to be funny, somebody might kind of chuckle, but I see these people, like, you can take John Boehner and you can take Harry Reid and any slew of these politicians, and, you know, they go out there professing this moralness, this, you know, they're a member of a church, that must mean they're good and they're pure and this other stuff, and I'm like, God must be watching what these people are doing, whatever God they may believe in, and is God really, if they believe in an afterlife, which direction are they really going? Because I'll tell you, what I see is evil, and when I think about what the founder said, it just seems to be totally the opposite. And I'm like, if we don't get back some core values and pure the difference of right and wrong and good and evil, can we survive? But again, I thank God and give many thanks to what has happened out in Nevada, because I do believe and these people were they're religious people. I'll say people of faith. I won't say what religion or anything else, but the Bundys, they do believe in God and faith, and they're believing in what they're doing and standing up for the right. But here, Harry Reid is willing to sell out his own state to China, and then whatever you want to call Boehner and all the games he's playing with amnesty. And I'm like, and yet these people, as part of their standard protocol to get reelected, is to go stand in front of that church and pretend to be this holy, it disgusts me to no end. But the founders were really right, and we need to somehow get back to these core values, moral values, right and wrong, and the role faith plays in that.
I agree with you, Sally. I think you're 100% right. Nothing is going to change unless we are able to capture the morality that our founders said over and over again was necessary to exist in a free society. Because you can't be free if you're busy looking in somebody else's backyard. You're only free if you are free in your own mind and in your own heart. And if you're busy trying to steal somebody else's stuff, that's not free. That's the scale and becomes evil. And evil does not incorporate freedom and liberty. It's evil, and I don't know. I think it's a sad commentary to think after all of these years and after all of the things that we have done as a society and all of the wonders that we have been able to create in our young 237 years, that we are reduced to evil. I don't want to think that. I don't want to believe that.
I truly believe there's many more good than good, honest, moral people, religious, faithful people in this country. But, you know, the role of the church, and we've had this discussion before, too, you know, the role of the church is to play whatever games to keep their tax-free status. And, I mean, here the Catholic Church is out there pushing for amnesty. And, I mean, all these crazy things of what is going on in the heart and soul of the church. And I'm like, doesn't the church, I don't know, the role the church has played in some of this stuff, it's just nuts to me. And yet deep down, I think the majority of Americans are truly good people. But the fact is we don't have many Americans anymore. They're everything is everybody else. And that can be from a Muslim to a Latino to a homosexual to saying someone's a woman, not an American. Whatever it is, all these different ways to divide us and make us hate each other instead of bringing us together. Yet they all preach about faith and how they're the ones who are going to bring us all together. And yet they are the most evil and unfaithful that I see out there.
What classes do you teach, Lynn?
I train teachers to work with tough kids. So I spent 20 years working with juvenile delinquents and high school dropouts, gang members, English as a second language, poor kids, anybody who struggles in school, that's kind of my expertise, and so that's what I teach. And that's why I talk about a moral multiculturalism. If you've got folks coming from all these different places, certainly we can agree on some very basic moral principles. One being lying is a bad thing. I mean, you've said that just recently a number of times. You can see where lying, how insidious that is and what it does. I can tell you what it's done for me personally. I've never been so disenchanted with the political system ever. I think a lot of people have just given up. They don't believe anything any politician says, and they don't have any hope that things will get better. You've actually given me a little hope looking at some of your stuff in the last couple of days. I appreciate you running for office, and I hope you get elected.
Oh, thank you. Well, I very strongly believe that if we can't trust each other, we can't work together. And I will never forget when I stopped teaching and I entered into the business world and I worked on Wall Street. And I was writing a contract or something. I can't remember exactly what it was because I was focused on his words, not on what it was. Oh, I had set up a route, a distribution route. And another fellow came in, and he stole my customers after working with me. Mm. And I asked him, I said, why are you doing, you know, why did you do that? Why did you go out and why did you lie? And he said, oh, Karen, I just love you as a person, but this is just business. And that was, to me, the summation of the way these people think. If it doesn't carry through in your everyday life, and if you're not willing to play fair, be fair, accept another person for their value and worth, and not try to steal everything that they have to improve your own value and worth, then what have you got? And you have nothing. Because eventually that same person lost everything too. So what was the difference? And what did they care?
And kind of an ability these days to take animals and make them the good guys, right?
Yeah.
I recently saw the movie Noah, and at one point Noah's thinking that man's so evil that maybe he should even kill his own family while they're on the ark. You know, he's going through this conundrum in his head while he's in this movie, and he makes the statement that, oh, look at these animals, at least they're the same as they were in the garden. And I got to thinking, wait a minute, no, they're not. When they left the garden, they started eating each other and tearing each other apart.
Yeah. They were not the same at all.
Yeah, so I'm not sure that the worms and the turtles are, you know, the answer to all of this.
Well, how do the kids in school, how do they feel? I know you worked, I worked with tough kids also, and I taught in New York, I taught in the, in Brooklyn, and I taught on Long Island, and I also taught in Brooklyn, and the I also worked with the worst of the worst. I wasn't in the alternative schools, but I was in the regular public school, in the junior high. And once the kids were exposed to something that they liked, you could teach them anything. And that's
once you
where
clicked in with their interest.
That's right.
Which is why No Child Left Behind does nothing for human development, because like an industry, we're trying to fit everybody into the same hole and make them do the same thing at the same time. And I also am a special educator, and we're totally ignoring the fact that there's human variability. There are people with different intellectual abilities and different abilities to sit for long periods of time. And I honestly believe that some of my special ed kids need a completely different curriculum. They don't need to be taking the same tests, and they don't, their lives as adults are going to be working and not necessarily going to college. So why can't we look at individuals and do what's best for the individual and not what's always best for the collective?
Well, then you must be in America instead of communism.
what do you think of Common Core?
Oh, my. Well, I think since we've had No Child Left Behind, that education has been, at least for my kids, who are the ones who are challenged in school, very, very, very hard for them. And I always found, like you did, that if you could just click into their interests, like if they were an artist and they could take 3 art classes a day, you'd have an amazing artist at the end, or they played guitar, or they took cars apart
and
put
them
together.
You could also use that ability. I used to use that ability to teach them math, because you had to measure the colors and they had to know the differences and what colors interacted with others and, you know, how to size up a page. And you could, as long as you knew what their interest was, you could integrate any subject into that interest.
Yeah, and except the curriculum is very scripted now. Very, very scripted. And I mean literally they're reading from scripts sometimes. One of my student teachers was in a preschool class, and they were teaching kids to count, and they weren't allowed to use their fingers to help the kids learn to count. They had to put this video on to count. Very scripted curriculum these days. Very, very stilted.
Yes, and that's, of course, as we know, being done on purpose, because if you read the words of the, quote, educators, because they certainly don't know anything about education, they believe that an educated people require more from their government than an uneducated populace. So they don't want to teach, they want to train, and they want uneducated people who will be nothing other than capable of being bobbleheads going, yes, boss, yes, boss, yes, master. And that's, to me, what education has become. I find it excruciatingly horrifying to walk into a school. A couple of years ago, I couldn't believe when people were telling me what was going on in school, and I said, no, I've got to check this out for myself. So I took a job as a tutor, and, oh, my God, they were right. I couldn't believe what was going on in school. It was horrifying to be in a classroom and watch a teacher not be able to spell, not be able to do math, and then turn around and portray some gobbledygook to these poor kids who had no concept of what was going on. And you're right, had to be on the same page at the same time, and there was nothing like, oh, Michonne, I finished. And I would say, well, then you could read the next chapter, or you could do this, or you could do that. There wasn't anything allowed. If you were finished, you had to sit there and be bored until the rest of the class was finished. And if you didn't finish on time, shame on you. You were told you were bad because you didn't finish on time. And it may have been God knows what. No wonder why these poor kids are constantly acting out and on drugs and doing all kinds of horrific things because they have literally no ability to function in a clear methodology to put factual information together. There aren't any. There isn't any. And I find it so sad.
I think they're teaching also, like we said, little geography and very little history. My students are coming to me in college knowing I always start out talking about the 60s and the civil rights movement because that's how special education got started. And they just have no clue what I'm talking about. I mean, literally, a class of 40 people just staring at me. I suppose as we've gone back to reading and math, that maybe that's what we're focusing on in schools. The other thing that's been a little discouraging for me in recent years is that folks that go into teaching now have the lowest SAT scores of any major in college.
Oh, gosh.
So we're not valuing our teachers very well.
Well, a lot of
the blind leading the blind
program called Teach for America, which is the people, the volunteers who were forced into volunteering for AmeriCorps because there were no jobs. And it's like, okay, well, you're the leftover, so you can be a monitor, and instead of calling you a monitor, we'll call you a teacher because we'll give you 5 weeks of training. Poof, you're a teacher. That doesn't work at all. Well, Lynn, it is wonderful to speak with you, and we are coming to the close of our show, the top of the hour, as we say. Please tell everyone where they can find you, where they can look to find your book. And thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's been very enlightening.
Well, ladies, it's been much fun. I appreciate what you do. The book is called Unveiling Grace, the story of how we found our way out of the Mormon Church. You can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or probably any Christian bookstore. Our website is unveilingmormonism.com if you have any interest in the Mormon faith. Please look us up. My name is Lynn Wilder, Dr. Lynn Wilder, former professor at Brigham Young University, now at Florida Gulf Coast.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Folks, you're listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman. Please look for our show, American Freedom Watch Radio. Share the information with your friends. Get involved. It's so important. America is of utmost importance. We thank the Bundys. God bless them. God bless all of the Oath Keepers and all of the Americans who are out in the West protecting our rights. against this oppressive government. I never thought I'd have to say that. Sally, it has been wonderful speaking with you. Remember, on Wednesday, you can catch us on Red State Talk Radio at 12 in the afternoon and on Sunday at 12 in the evening, and that is redstatetalkradio.com. Please visit our websites, agenda21today.com, karenshone.com, votekarenshone.com, americaismyname.com, saveamericafoundation.com, and panhandlepatriots.com. We thank you all for joining us this evening. This is your host, Karen Schoen, and God bless all of you. God bless America. And you too, Sally and Lynn. It has been a pleasure this evening. Good night, all. Good night to you all.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.